Hello and welcome back to the EG Way podcast, coming to you live and direct from sunny Ipswich and EG's headquarters here. We've got a really interesting show today because we're talking about software delivery and digital transformation. We have joining us from Ipswich Building Society, Jim Overy, who's the head of IT and change.
Good afternoon.
And also joining us, we have from the EG team, Alan Jackson, the Chief Operating Officer.
Hello.
And also joining us today is Senior Business Analyst Robin Birkby.
Hi.
And also Martin Dumble, who is the Business Development Manager here.
Good afternoon.
And I'm Andrew Walker. I'm a freelance journalist. I'm sort of like EG's deadbeat uncle. I stayed over one night after a party, and now I live in the loft. We'll cut that bit out.
That is right.
Keep it in. Let's kick off today's discussion because it's very interesting. First of all, I'd like to welcome Jim because you are a client.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, which is very exciting. It's just I don't meet clients. They won't let me meet people very often.
Can't think why.
So that's exciting for me. And you're head of IT and change at Ipswich Building Society.
That's correct, yes.
So you're driving, presumably, your job is driving digital transformation.
It is, yes. So as well as a number of things that I sort of cover in society, IT and digital change is a big part of my role.
Okay, and here's a question. We hear a lot about digital transformation. It's kind of like a buzz term. I'm interested, why are you transforming things digitally?
I think from our perspective, we have quite a traditional model in terms of the way that we do business with our clients. And we understand, obviously, when you look around, things are obviously significantly changed in the way that a lot of businesses now engage with their customers. So I think from our perspective, it's about making sure that we remain relevant and that we also are offering those similar services. But we try to sort of put a different spin on it from our perspective in terms of the way that we engage with our customers. So we don't want to lose the focus of our customers.
Because, I mean, it must be difficult in the financial services sector. It's a heavily regulated space. So there must be a challenge there. And how do you innovate when you've got so many rules and regulations you have to follow?
Yeah, I mean, it is incredibly difficult. Luckily, I think that most of the regulations are now taking digital transformation seriously. There's probably much more of a focus in terms of that digital piece now. So it makes it a little bit easier. But you're right, we do have to, you know, we have to stay making sure that our customers are protected, their funds are protected. So we obviously have to follow, you know, very strict regulation and guidance. But I think that, you know, as long as we are adhering to those policies, I think digital transformation is more than possible.
So Martin, I'm going to put this one over to you here because your business development and you're working with Jim in a heavily regulated environment. How does it affect your role as someone who is putting software solutions in place?
It's a tricky one because I think no two clients are the same. I'd say that it's around tying it into an outcome and what a client is looking to achieve, because if you can then tie it into that specific deliverable, it makes it easier for everyone to understand and it gives you a common goal to work towards. And then you can understand and plan for all of the elements that might make that piece up.
And Robin, I mean, you're a business analyst, so you must be faced with constantly different changing sets of business circumstances that you've got to sort of deal with and then turn that into a solution. I mean, what's your take on digital transformation?
Well, I'd say every case is completely different. So we take a lot of guidance from the clients themselves, and the clients generally have a good idea of what they want. So we can advise and we can give ideas, but at the end of the day, they are experts in their field, so we're only there to help them achieve their goals.
Alan?
I think the interesting thing for me about working with Jim and IBS, and probably the challenge for Martin, is one of the early bits of guidance we were given is they wanted us out of there as soon as possible. So I think that's fair.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to get tied into some kind of long-term partnership, long-term sort of reliance on a software provider. They wanted someone to come in to help them deliver the reports initially, but to leave them with a trained team and a legacy of software which they could run themselves and they could build on themselves. So, you know, for Martin in the sales role, that's very counterintuitive. But we knew that we weren't going to be able to work with them at all if we didn't listen. So we built our proposal around that. We built our proposal with a training outcome at the heart of it. And I think that's what helped us win the work. I mean, it's pretty presumptuous to say. But.
And I think to add to that, I think it's less of an, it's more about a joint relationship in terms of driving this transformation. It's not a an us and them relationship. It's you have to consider yourselves as a supplier, part of the client's team, and vice versa. I think the client needs to see you as an extension of their team. And that mindset really helps on those sorts of engagements so that you can really work together and get the best outcome.
Now this brings us to this interesting idea of delivery. I've sometimes heard you talk about your work and say that, you know, you focus sometimes being a software delivery company. And obviously when I hear that, I think of UBS, right? And you know, I think of someone actually delivering software. But software delivery is a lot more than that, presumably. When you talk about training outcomes and working with clients as part of the team, it's a more nuanced concept than just turning up with a box with a CD in it, right?
Yeah, I think the idea is that some companies say they do software development. We put the delivery word in the title rather than the development word in the title because we're not here to build tech for the sake of it. It's not a hobby. It's not something to keep people entertained. It is there to enable businesses like an IBS to achieve their goals. It's a tool, software, in the end. So software delivery means, for us, means that we are focused continually on getting the right outcome as quickly as possible for the best price that we can do for our customers. We're focused on delivering for them rather than just simply developing the software that we think's cool or we think's useful.
In addition, I'd say that any code and any software that we provide, it fits in a wider space. So that what we're building for them is owned by the clients in the long run. So it's things that we're handing over to them, and they anything that we create is not ours, it's theirs. So we are delivering a software solution, but that solution fits into their business and into a much wider ecosystem than just the little bit that we're working on.
Now there's an interesting point that sort of emerges from that then, which is, and I'm going to put this one to Jim first, which is everything runs on software and processes, and in the digitally transformed business, increasingly there are elements of automation, of sort of data management, and that kind of stuff. So, is there really a dividing line between software and business consulting in the way that, you know, there used to be a very clear delineation between what the consultants did and then what the devs produced? But it seems like those things are getting closer together.
Yeah, I think they are. I don't think there is any sort of differentiation between the two now. I think in order to be able to provide a good solution, you have to be really ingrained in what the processes are and understand what they are in order to deliver something that is going to be useful to the client. You really have to almost live and feel the business a little bit. It's not a case of just being able to sort of walk away with a spec sheet and say, there you go, knock that up. It just doesn't work that way anymore. And I think it goes back to the point earlier about having that sort of longer term relationship. You know, from our perspective, we wanted them to come in and deliver a piece of work that allowed us to be able to offer more digital services longer term. And that entailed, you know, as they said, it was about delivering that piece of work and effectively being able to walk away from that and allowing us to carry on the journey internally. But understanding the way that EG work and the way that they've helped us with those processes and the way they've helped that development, it allows us to have a much stronger relationship with them because they start to understand our business and about what our challenges are for our business.
And presumably then, Robin, that's why EG have a team of business analysts here as opposed to just a room full of coders.
Yes, yeah, it's our job to go in and understand the customers that we're building it for, the people who are going to be using it, because if you don't understand the people who are going to be using it, you may design something that's completely unusable to the people who it's meant for. You get people who aren't very tech savvy, in which case they need very simple screens. You get others who want to know how every intricate detail works, in which case something that's really simple and just a quick button click might be a bit too novice for them. So you have to really bear in mind exactly who you're building this for, and every decision that's made along the lines has to be for the particular scenarios.
Yeah, I learned quite a long time ago, sort of quite early in my project management career, that there's a real need for a really strong business analyst in a Scrum team. If you're going to run a Scrum process effectively with delivery in mind, then you need a business analyst, because the product owner role in that environment is so all-encompassing and intense. It really is the sort of key success factor in an agile project, is having the right product owner. And it is not realistic in most cases to expect them to do that full role, as the textbooks might tell you. So somebody like Robin, with a real eye for detail and the ability to focus because they're dedicated to the project, really bridges the gap between what's a difficult job as a product owner and the development team. So the developers can focus on code, the product owner can focus on the business, and the BA acts as that bridge between the two people. So the business analyst role at EG really is pivotal to everything that we do.
So going back to those first agile principles, when they talked about relationships over software, what they're really talking about is the business analyst bridging that gap between people and the technology.
Yeah, well, the product owners are generally coming from a different background. So I've worked with all the developers before. I've worked in a development background before. So I tend to know what the developers are looking for, whereas the product owners are generally business users. So they are experts in what they need and what they want. But they haven't necessarily had any experience in building the software or building a project. So I'm that person who sits between them, and I'm able to translate what they need into well-defined user stories that the developers can then develop off. Because at the end of the day, there is a gap that internally, when we're picking up a project, we don't necessarily understand the business to the best of that we could if we had worked for that company. And similarly, the clients don't necessarily understand how we work. So by having that bridge in between, I'm able to talk to both sides and get us all on the same page.
It's that process of eliminating interpretation. So the role that Robin's describing there between the BA and the product owner minimizes that interpretation, which limits basically the, you know, any scope creep or misinterpretation, or something doesn't do quite as you would quite like it to. And again, it goes back to the relationship piece. As you develop that relationship, it means that the deliverable that you then come out with at the end is that much better, much higher quality. And I think that goes back to the challenge that the IT industry had historically of, you know, there wasn't that relationship. It was very us and them in terms of business and IT function. And that's why you would get, you know, headline news of IT project failures. Now, it's taken a change in approach and philosophy to really address that. And I think it's moving in the right direction, but that needs to continue. It can't be underplayed.
Now, this raises an interesting question, I think, for Jim. It must be difficult in the finance sector, a heavily regulated environment, people who are not all naturally engaged with IT. It must be quite difficult selling digital transformation into stakeholders and getting them to really understand the value of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it can be quite difficult, especially in that environment, to sort of stick your head above the parapet and say we're going to do something slightly different, because there's always a reticence to do that, because you know the people are very mindful of the regulation that's entailed, the constraints they have in terms of the way they deliver their business. So, but I think it is about having the right engagement with someone that can help to shape what that transformation looks like and offer that sort of visibility about what actually could be achieved by migrating that. And obviously, the important part for digital transformation, is to make sure that, you know, it is still a value to the business. There's no point in just taking something and changing it for the purpose of just changing it. There has to be an intrinsic value in doing that. And I think that that's a really important point, that, you know, that's what's drawn out of that engagement with the BAs.
And I think that's the useful thing about using Agile in all of our projects, is that we're able to then show the users, it's shortening that feedback loop so that the users get hold of it sooner rather than later. They can tell us if it's working or it's not working, or if there's things that we've missed, or if there's things that they get really excited about and actually they want added to it, which often is what we find. Someone will see something in front of them and go, yes, that's epic, that's what we wanted, but actually this would be really good as well. And that's where we can change our approach, or we can add other things and or prioritize things differently.
Now, this is an interesting point, because it goes back to something one of our earlier podcasts talking about: the sooner you get something in front of a user, the sooner you find out if it's any good. And the reason why this is interesting, having you here from a building society, is I was recently reading about customer call center spikes, and apparently every UK bank suffered a massive spike in support calls when they introduced hardware secure keys, because no one liked them, people found them hard to use. It's something like a 5x increase in customer service overheads. And this is an interesting problem, isn't it? Because doesn't it look like you solve the IT department side by putting in a new system, but that can actually cascade over into causing problems elsewhere in the business, like customer services and like customer retention, those kinds of areas. So how do you do you use testing to try and make sure that everything is an incremental shift rather than a big change that puts people off and has them hitting the phones?
I think certainly from a traditional, if you look at financial services, traditionally they've been based on lots of legacy technologies where that testing cycle is very drawn out. You're not really seeing anything towards the end. And by that time, a lot of the cases, actually it's too late to change anything by that point. I think where the drive for agile and the changes, the more iterative approach to changes, allows you to almost prepare the business for what changes you're likely to need in order to address your user community, or the way that they're going to engage with that product, or the way your customers are going to engage with that product. It helps you to start building those journeys early on so that there's no real surprises when it comes down to the final point. It gives you longer to engage with your customers, prepare them and let them know what's coming around the corner, but also in terms of your own business, to prepare your own staff to make sure that they understand what's likely to impact them when in that journey for a digital piece.
I think those card readers particularly are a classic example of a sort of a stopgap bridge type solution to a problem, because the solution that's there for banks now is smartphones and soft keys that generate encryption, thumbprints, stuff like this. But obviously when they sat down and decided they had a problem about two-factor authentication and these kind of things, that was the only option they had. You know, the sort of smartphones weren't in everybody's pockets quite so much. And so they probably thought, and this could have been 2 years ago, bearing in mind how long it might have taken to get this stuff done, that was probably the right answer to a problem. But you'll see them fade out now because there's a better way. And that, you know, it's in direct response to the customers. So you kind of, you do your best at the time, but it's more proof that sort of long cycles of, product design followed by build and sort of sign off and issuance out to customers and things like that are not effective. So, you know, we offer things like the 5-day Google sprint. And I imagine if HSBC had sat down and gone, right, we've got a security problem, I want to do this card reader, I need to see everybody, let's spend 5 days kicking the idea around and then test it with some users. So they got to the Friday and realised very, very quickly that, you know, people did probably what I did when I received mine from Barclaycard a few months ago, which is looked at it once and shoved it in a drawer.
But that raises an interesting question, which I want to put out to the whole room here, because you all come at this from slightly different angles, which is digital transformation doesn't stop, presumably, because the digital world keeps changing, which means the business processes keep changing, which means the demands in terms of what you're delivering and what the users expect is changing. And from a biz dev point of view, that must put you in a challenging situation, because you're constantly trying to hit a moving target with your clients.
I think moving target is right. I think it's a mindset shift in that, you know, the way that technology develops so quickly and becomes that much more accessible faster, I think, you know, the businesses that do well are those that take the smaller, more frequent steps, maybe even to medium term steps, but definitely not longer term, because things change so quickly. Consumer demand changes, technology changes, cost changes. So, you know, I think it does go to that mindset. But as you say, I think it means different things to different people. And that's why, you have to work going back to that relationship element with your clients to understand what the appetite is, what it is they're trying to achieve, and then target it that way.
We're going to tie it up there for now on software delivery and digital transformation, but hold that thought, because in a couple of weeks we're going to do another one of these and get out another session with the team here about how you do agile in an effective way that meets the needs of the business and meets the needs of your customers. So, moving on, that's goodbye from sunny Ipswich, and it's goodbye from Head of IT and Change at Ipswich Building Society, Jim Overy.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Robin Birkby, who's the Senior Business Analyst here.
See ya.
Goodbye to Alan Jackson as well.
Yep, bye.
Okay, and goodbye to Martin. Sorry, Alan's the Chief Operating Officer. Sorry, I'm not...
It's not important.
It is. It's not. What could be more important than that? I'll tell you what. Business Development Manager, Martin Dunwell.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and we're all going to wave bye-bye to the camera this time, which is hilarious on a podcast because you can't see us do it. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Yay. And if you want to see that clip, join us on our Twitter feed. That's at EG Limited. That's IJYI. It's EG. It's pronounced EG because everything we do is a great example. And find us online at www.eg.com. Thanks. That was the EG way.
Something different for a lunchtime.
It certainly was.